It is radio time again, and that's because it's 2 o'clock on a Thursday, which is always the time for Greenhorn Radio, radio by young farmers for young farmers, and approaching topics relevant to young farmers. And perhaps those of you who are not yet young farmers, may you please join us soon. I'm joined today all the way from California by my good friend Andrew Mariani, who is a fabulous wine man. Andrew, are you there? Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm in Brooklyn, which is good.
You know, this is an exciting happening, not only to be on Heritage Radio, but also because this is the first time I've ever talked on a landline at Scribe, actually.
Well,
we got new phones out here. We have a real office, and we're connecting through a little cord, which is rare. I usually have a cell phone and walking around in the farm or the vineyard. So
it's a big deal, and there's
big day.
there's so much coordinating to do in the beginning phases of any farm startup operation, and so much telephone time.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that we can survive it. But then when you think about the farm workers who are organizing themselves across continents, across this continent, tracking the seasons and the various crops that have to be picked, and the incredibly elaborate social networks of communication that our agricultural system has relied on, sometimes formal, sometimes informal. Even if we only had phones, I think we could still do what we're doing also. Even though radio is great, even though wine is great, even though internet is great. Take
well,
it all
amount
away.
Of,
we'll be fine.
Communication and coordination that it takes to, establish a community around food, which is really what it's all about, is pretty amazing. And I think the Greenhorns is doing an amazing job of that.
Y'all
out
should
east and now out west. It was so lovely to see you out here recently.
So lovely to be out. I mean, April in California, it's almost not to be beat. I just have to say, May in New England, holy moly.
Yeah.
You know, people say,
big
you know,
time.
Farming is sexy. It's like, yes, it is in the spring. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when
need some of that. I need some of that. You know what I'm eating right now is some Brooklyn chocolates from Mass Brothers.
Holy moly.
I figured I'd get in the spirit of Brooklyn while I talk to you.
Well, thank you for doing that, and thank you to those fabulous bearded brothers for their continuous production. I think that they've had their noses to the grindstone recently. In the producing. Now, wait a minute. We haven't even talked about who you are.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So let's start with the beginning. would you mind introducing yourself, Andrew?
Yes. I have a new project in Sonoma called Scribe Winery, and I've been back in California, my home state, for about 3 years now. And I purchased an old turkey farm. It was an industrial, kind of disused, nasty old place. And my intention from the beginning has been to kind of revive this piece of land back to its original use, which, going back to the 1850s, was a vineyard and winery. And my education is in enology and viticulture, and I worked at wineries in Europe. So I wanted to come back to California and do that here. And I'm lucky enough to work on a beautiful piece of property that has a great history and a lot of opportunity to share the kind of the fruits of this part of Sonoma Valley with the public. So
this is a crappy piece of crappy little farm, but this is a pretty uncrappy vista. let's just talk about what you're looking out on as you sit up there in your beautiful new little office.
Right. Well, we're on a little bit of a knoll here. We're in the Carneros Appellation of Sonoma Valley, so this is the most southern part of Sonoma Valley. And just kind of where Carneros is a flat land zone. It's kind of north of the San Francisco Bay, the San Pablo Bay. So it's really flat up until you get to about where I am. And behind me, to my back, is Arrowhead Mountain. So we're just about to head up the mountain. So I have a little bit of a vista looking over Carneros and the flatlands there. To my left is the bay, and if I went up to the top of the mountain, I could see San Francisco and then the ocean out to the west of me.
Let's talk about the top of your mountain. Oh, well, I don't want to interrupt you, but...
Yeah.
Let's talk about the top. Let's talk about the top of your mountain.
Rogue Ridge?
Yeah.
Rogue Ridge. That's what we call, that's what they call the ridgeline up there. It's actually a cool story. It's so all right, I'm getting off topic, but I have to tell you a quick prohibition story. Is that okay?
I think prohibition is permitted in this instance. Yes.
Okay, cool. So this property, you know, it goes back to 1858. It was a winery and vineyard. The Dressel brothers, they were kicking ass, winning prizes all over the U.S. You know, World's Fair, gold medals and stuff. And then Prohibition hits in 1919, and they go underground. Eventually, it wipes them out, but they had a pretty good run during the Prohibition era. So there's this one of the main bootlegging roads that extended from Lowville Valley, which is the valley behind where I am, to San Francisco, came up over the ridge, down Arrowhead Mountain, past, through my property, and then off to San Francisco. So Lobo Valley had 20 or so distilleries there, and guys would sit on the ridge lines with lights and flash, and that's how they would communicate with the people in the valley, letting them know whether it was safe or not to drive their moonshine or wine or whatever they were taking to the city. So they started calling it Rogue Ridge, because there was kind of this rogue zone. And the Hacienda, which we'll get to, at one point during Prohibition, was a kind of a stash spot in the speakeasy, and maybe a brothel as well. So Rogue Ridge, that's the story of Rogue Ridge.
So they didn't even have cell phones. I mean, they were just organized. When there's booze.
Exactly, yeah.
All we need is, a flash of light.
It was like lanterns and stuff, yeah. But they were communicating, getting the goods to the people who needed it.
Yeah, last night I went to a show with my friend Law of... It was called Crooked Still, and uh-huh. I got it confused. I was like, still crooked, but it seems like you guys are still crooked over there, and pretty shiny. Let's talk about the wine.
Was that a compliment, or is that trash talking?
Oh, I'm only going to compliment you on the radio. We'll save the trash talk for in person.
Okay. Well, we do try to embrace the Prohibition era, you know, illicit methods that they adopted, so...
Lingo that stays there?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. How do people talk about? I mean, there's bootleggers.
There's bootleggers. The hooch. Yeah, there's some hooch floating around here.
You guys aren't making any hooch out of your own scribe wine.
We're not making any hooch yet, but we've thought about it.
Yeah, we won't talk about that now. Let's talk about the wine.
The wine,
And the divine wine, and how that which is up on the mountain, and the top of the mountain, the history of this place, the tumbling waters, and the ecology that spurts its fingers out, especially in California when there's water, the ecology is easier to find. How is that informing your practice?
I think kind of the scribe's approach to farming and the way that we kind of address the growing of everything from grapes that we grow to the food that we grow here stems from this kind of concept of rebuilding the ecosystem and the biodiversity of this property that we live and work on, because the previous owners had disrespected that in a sense. From the beginning, it was clear that it would be our, you know, to our benefit to kind of enhance that biodiversity and bring everything back. So a lot of the stuff that we do is to promote that cause. For example, we planted recently the first section of our insectary system, which will bring from the mountainside beneficial insects back down closer to the valley floor into the vineyard to kind of balance the ecosystem and combat negative pests and things like that. We also, you know, plant as many native species all around the property in the vineyard as we can. We also have about an acre worth of food production, and all of this is kind of to break up the monoculture that vineyard wine country zones are so susceptible to.
Well, and it's a shame, you know, as these regions become so specialized with wine, and, you know, Chianti is an example that I've recently kind of really felt viscerally kind of alienated by. It's grapes, grapes, and only grapes. And so the work is super concentrated right when it's needed. And then because there's, you know, because there's not other things to do in the other times of the year, the kind of sentience of cultivation leaves the landscape, and it becomes this, you know, pretty sterile and hostile space. Now you're,
and it creates a system where, you know, of migrant farm workers that, you know, I think having one thing that kind of a byproduct of wanting to grow our own food on this property means that we employ, you know, more people throughout the year, which is a great thing, and you start to build kind of a workforce and friendship and community with people in the vineyard versus a lot of places where, you know, you're pretty solitude for most of the year, and then during the harvest you're packed with tons of people. But so I think that's that diversity of crop is so beneficial in so many ways.
Yeah, well, and when things are, you know, when there's ups and downs and winters and summers, it's a more durable social and working environment, I feel. So much research has been done, and I am a product of UC Berkeley and of the agroecology program there, where there's much discussion and engagement in the issue of beneficial insects and the understanding that these riparian areas and native vegetation areas where there are melliferous plants and nectar sources and places for ovipositing of these are fabulous lepidopterous and other insect friends have incredibly important effects on vineyard health. And let's just like totally dork out, if you wouldn't mind, about vineyard health right now and about you're in California, so you know it's not Chianti, and you got different benefits there.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, California, there's some major threats right now. This European grapevine moth is freaking everybody out because it's just been introduced to Napa, and it's a little moth that comes in and gnaws on the vines and the fruit and has wiped out vineyards around the world. So, you know, there's a major imbalance in our kind of broader ecosystem here. I mean, I don't know. I want to ask you what you think about insectary systems, because the one I worked with an entomologist to develop ours, because nobody that I could find in the area had done really a scientific study on it. So I don't really know if it's going to work, but I mean, in theory it makes sense, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to make some sense if you observe it over a long time. And there's a wonderful lady up in Mendocino who I think she was working for Fetzer for a while. But this is another example of when extension officers would be really fabulous pollinators to include in our in the areas alongside our production, in the areas of inspiration and science that we obviously draw from heavily in our agronomy. But they've been doing studies there about insectaries and beneficial impact. I mean, I can send you the report. That's a free PDF, and it's put out by the Mendocino wine growers. Because in Mendocino, they have market necessity. They're all growing organic over there.
Right.
Because they got to sell those grapes, and they're and they need to be assured that they can. Okay, we're getting off topic, but it's okay because we're just dorking out.
How much time do we have?
We have we're halfway through.
Okay.
Wait a minute now. Let's make sure that we're clear about your background, because I think many people are going to be asking, well, how do I get the skills to, you know, embark on such a boisterous and lugubrious adventure as Andrew has. Let's talk. When did you know that this is your path, and how did you bobble along your path in the beginning?
Well, I studied international trade of agricultural goods in college at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. But on the side, for fun, I studied enology and viticulture. I grew up in Winters, California, in an agricultural background. My family grows walnuts and almonds over there. So I have kind of an agricultural base, you know, I think, which helped. But after about a year in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill, I realized I did not want to be a diplomat and wanted that seasonality that agriculture provides. So quit a really cool job, a great job, then went to Europe and worked for nothing on a vineyard in Greece. And that decision pretty much changed everything because it just put me in front of a lifestyle and a set of ideals and a group of people that value these things that I was interested in. So, I mean, I think just kind of jumping in and going for it and kind of moving out there was huge. And it was while I was in Greece that I decided that I wanted to do this for a living. And you know, California seemed like a good place to come back and do it. So I don't know. I mean, I think just putting yourself out there is what it takes. And kind of, you know, I think, and all along the way, and even now, I feel like I'm just kind of figuring out day to day. Like, there's no perfect set of skills to learn to, you know, prepare yourself for what it takes to do this job, or I think any job. You know, I think it takes just enthusiasm and passion.
And ultimately, you know, well, you're talking about this kind of surrender, and it's interesting because it's kind of a familiar theme. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, talking about this moment where you just kind of were like, golly, this is it, here I am, I'm here and I'm committed, and that ultimately it's that commitment itself.
And it's exciting and it's kind of scary and you don't know if it's going to work, and you know, you're not going to have a Lamborghini in a couple years, but you know, figure it out.
Well, who wants a Lamborghini anyway, really?
Right. Well, right. Well, that's a good thing to realize.
I was just recently, this is a side story, I was just recently up in Oregon. We were partnering with a wonderful NGO called Friends of Family Farmers, mm-hmm. and we had a mixer for young farmers at the Small Farmers Journal annual horse-drawn farm equipment auction and swap meet.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a biannual event mm-hmm. up in Sisters, Oregon, where, you know, it is 4 days with 12 hours a day of active auctioning, you know, bidding mm-hmm. on farm implements drawn by horses, carriages, horses, tools, miscellanea of many shapes mm-hmm. and sizes. And at that auction, you could get yourself hooked up for the Oregon Trail. We're talking Clydesdales, harnesses, everything you need, wagon with the cover on, you know, with barrels and all the mm-hmm. iron tools you'd need. I mean, we're talking $4,000 now.
Wow.
You can't get a Honda for $4,000.
No, there's your there's your tractor right there.
Right there.
There's your vineyard tractor. I need it. Yeah, I'm all about that. I love that. We have 100 head of sheep parts of the year out here to eat weeds and do that kind of stuff. We're getting our first goats next week. So, you know, that animal force is pretty amazing, and the horsepower, you can't beat it.
Can't beat it. So now...
Can't beat it.
That animal sentience is coming to Scribe.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the grapes.
Okay.
How did you find the grapes that you found, and what's the story there?
So, Carneros, Sonoma is a wonderful region for growing Burgundian varietals. So, Pinot and Chardonnay are what we've planted. And those are varietals that I've always loved and are, you know, delicate, nuanced grape varietals and are really challenging and exciting to pursue. But in addition to that, and we're going to get just the first bit of crop this year, we planted Riesling and Sylvaner, which are two varietals that were originally planted in America, brought to Sonoma by Emil Dressel, the founder of this property, and planted here on this site. So this is kind of the the beginning of Riesling and Sylvaner in the United States happened here. So it's really an honor to be able to grow those varietals again on this property. And that Sylvaner varietal, which is a rare varietal from the Rhine River in Germany, is not widely planted in the United States. I think there's 1 acre of it in the Central Coast, and we have a couple of here now. So it's a really rare and wonderful wine that I'm excited to make. So those are the main varieties that we have planted here at Scribe.
Well, and sitting as I am in the converted tractor trailer headquarters of Heritage Radio, a brand and a body of beings mostly committed to the preservation of rare animal species, but I think that they're into rare grapes also on occasion.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Yeah, we went. This is one of those scenarios for sure. There was one Sylvaner vine in the nursery at UC Davis. That was the only place we could find buds. So we took all the buds from one existing plant in California.
So you went to the experiment station that was run by the Land Grant University.
Yeah.
And you went to the place that had been funded by our government to sustain and study grape varieties that could be suitable for commercial application in the state. And you yourself, as a young farmer, went there and got plant material from the government, essentially.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Holy moly.
That's a beautiful thing, right?
Huh. Amazing. That's democracy right there. That's why I'm not an anarchist. I mean, I am an anarchist, but that's why we need libraries, plant libraries, and...
Absolutely.
So let's hear it for the land grants just for a moment.
Yeah, cheers for them. And you know, UC Davis is an amazing resource for a lot of viticulturalists or vintners who are interested. I mean, a lot of people don't work with them at all, but it's amazing the exchange and the availability that they have for you know, this side of things. We have some good relationships with them, so I'm all for it.
So now we have very few minutes left, but now that we're on the topic of relationships,
I feel like I had a bunch of questions I wanted to ask you too, but I guess that's not what this is about.
Well, and while you were turning your back, I snuck in and called your brother and asked him if he would come on too. So it's going to be two Marianis for the price of one.
Where is he? I don't even know where he is.
Well, he's on for next. So
okay,
we already told him, but let's talk about relationships here, because wine is as I just had a bit of beer, actually. wine is a part of culture. It is a part of our understanding of the table. And I think that what inspires me most about your whole program over there is how holistic your understanding of wine really is, and that you've included that relational table celebrational aspect from the very, very beginning, and like before you even had a friggin' roof fixed on your crazy hacienda, you were throwing fabulous parties. Now,
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in California, in Napa and Sonoma, the wine industry has gotten to be a big deal, right? So people have, I think, lost track of what the hell wine is in the first place, which is this amazing product, the amazing expression of the land that brings people together around a table and is consumed along with food and friends and family and things like that. It shouldn't be made to exist solely in a lab or on a wine critic's desk so that he can give it a score, you know. It should be made to be enjoyed in a cultural framework. So yeah, everything that we do, and whenever we have guests here, we always have food for them and have lunch for them, and wine, and our wine specifically, are made to be enjoyed with food and not on their own. So I think that that's wine's place kind of in our culture, and that's what we want to celebrate.
And would you say, just from your you know, mere glances that you've had of the burgeoning youthful food culture in your area of the world, would you say that that set of values a set of values, principles, and practices. That's what they say about agrarianism.
Yeah.
That are echoed there. Would you say that that is?
You're saying here where I am.
Here where you are. Is it strong?
It's strong with the young food pioneers of California. Yeah, but I mean it's spreading. But I think that it was lost for a long time, in this part of Northern California. But I'm hugely inspired by the people, my friends, and the people that I have the opportunity to collaborate with on events, chefs in San Francisco or other produce farmers up here in Sonoma and other young winemakers. I mean, there's a definite rumbling of excitement about food and its place in our kind of American fabric. So it's happening.
It's,
you know that.
Well, I just, I wanted to know what was happening over there too.
you wanted to get it on the radio.
It's on record. It's happening.
Yeah.
Be a part of it.
Word. Pioneers. Yeah, I'm loving this idea of the young food pioneers and these little homesteads that are popping up all over the country. It's really an amazing thing to do here in Sonoma and know that people around the U.S. are doing the same.
Yeah, Well, I can't talk about it really much, but I just wrote my first op-ed. I'll send it to you. You can get out your red pen. But it's about the new American Homestead Act that is required.
Yes. I can't. Oh, please send it to me. I'd love to read it.
Yeah, I'll send it before it goes to the papers.
Cool.
Now, we have not that much time. In fact, we have very little time, but I wanted to say.
Do you want me to have Adam come in here? You could just get him on speaker or something.
Or he can just pass the phone over.
Okay.
But what is the next phase for you? What is the next, like, folks who are tuned in and turned on and ready to drink? how would you recommend that they stay abreast of what's going on with Scribe, and apart from East meets West and all the rabbitiness that's happening? What are some of the things that you would like folks to know about? And I think you have a special wine posse, don't you?
Wine posse?
Like, can't you go on the website and become a part of the wine posse?
You can join the wine gang. It's called the Scribe Viticultural Society, and what that gives you is access to all the wines and kind of everything that you ever would want to know about Scribe. But you can also just sign up for a newsletter or a mailing list at scribewinery.com and kind of get, ever so often get a little blurb about what we're doing up here. But we're about to start a renovation of the old hacienda, basically making it, which is an old, it's a home that was originally built in 1860, had a big remodel in 1912, but has been abandoned for about 30 years. We've been using it for events, as you know, and parties, but we're about to kind of secure it and give it some electricity and some water and turn it into kind of more of a focal point and usable building. So that's exciting. That's kind of on-site stuff. We're going to start selling Scribe produce at the Sonoma Farmers Market every Tuesday night. That's exciting. And then this summer, there's a few cool events happening in San Francisco, as well as up here. We're doing one. There's this amazing church that has just been fixed up next to Dolores Park, and the chef from Contigo, Brent Emerson, and I are going to host a big dinner there. That's on June 24th. And then Scribe and 18 Reasons, which is By Right Market's kind of art community organization, are starting a somewhat of a ongoing collaboration. We'll be doing some producer dinners in San Francisco where all the wine and produce and meat served will be all Scribe. And finally, on July 31st, in the Hacienda, right before it goes into its next reincarnation, there's going to be a food, wine, art, sleepover, pancake breakfast happening, where 10 artists are invited to come take a room in the old hacienda, do whatever they want to it, display art or in visual, audio, or performance. And people are going to come and eat food and drink wine and see art and walk, explore the land.
So there you have it.
Things.
There you have it from the source, from Andrew Mariani himself. It's a schedule full of yum and plenty of wine to go along with it. I think we're going to pause for a second and let Adam take the phone. I really am so thankful, Andrew, for your leadership in this realm of enology and hospitality. And I look forward also to, at some point, making something happen. We've got a pretty fantastic West Coast tour shaping up, starting up in Washington State and cruising on down towards Albuquerque, October, November, Greenhorn style. So,
well, let's put a stop at Scribe on the calendar, and we'll keep you guys rolling down the coast.
Sounds good to me. So, thank you so much, Andrew. Is he around? Can we just pass the phone?
Let me see. I don't know how the phone system works. Hold on.
Dear radio audience, please pause.
All right.
Can you guys cut while we're pausing?
Hey, Adam.
Yeah, it's not going to be. We're going to cut this out.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to cut this out. So it's just going straight to the next one.
Okay. Can I tell him that before we go back on?
Yeah.
Do you want to call Adam in his office?
I'll probably get him right now. I think he's probably just going to patch the phone through. Let's see.
Okay, let's see. How's it go? How does it sound? Am I sounding drunk?
No, it sounds good.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, is this Adam or Andrew?
This is Andrew. Adam's coming. He's hosting some guests down in the tasting cellar.
Well, so we're going to cut out all this intermediary stuff.
Okay.
So we can even just, like, chill out for a second if you want, or we could call him back in his office. Tell me what makes sense from your end, because it's totally flexible here.
He's right here, so it's up. Do you want to stay in here?
Uh-huh. That's fine.
Yeah.
Are you going downstairs?
Yeah, I can go downstairs. So he'll just stay on this line. How long is it going to be, do you think?
Like 20 minutes.
20 minutes? Okay. Well, why don't you just call back?
Call back and do which number? Which extension?
It's going to be in 20 minutes.
No, not in 20 minutes.
Oh,
no,
for 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Oh, so right now.
Right now.
Okay. So, all right, well, you can just stay on this line. We'll stay on.
Okay.
Was that good?
That was awesome. You're fabulous.
Yeah. Cool.
Very happy.
How you doing?
I'm doing so. I've been farming.
Yeah, man.
I'm so happy. I just been like jamming my. I'm on a transplanter, which is this like huge machine on the back of a tractor where you just like jam plants in,
mm-hmm.
and then you can speed up. So you're like.
Nice.
It's totally my flav.
That's so fun. How big is your crew out there? Are you doing everything?
No. I'm working for my friend Dina. So we lost my land. It was drama.
Right.
But Dina needed a farm partner, and I just like jumped in. I was like, yeah, I can come for May, and May is important. And she needed someone really badly, and I needed to farm really badly. So it's turning out to be just like both of our
Perfect.
Best.
Where's the farm?
It's an hour north of New York in Connecticut. On a ridge, and it's 200 acres, 250 CSA shares, rabbits.
Wow.
All my rabbits live there now, and she's gotten more rabbits, so we're like bunny heaven. And then goats, pigs, and laying hens. And then
amazing.
Orchard. It's just like old school Yankee Doodle dance, like Yankee farming.
Right.
And
that is
awesome. It's so heaven. Yeah, when are you on the East Coast, man?
I think I'm going to make it out there again in August.
Oh, my God. We're having a two-day-long Chautauqua in Maine.
In Maine?
Yeah. Seaweed.
Where in Maine?
Well, one day it's going to be... It's either 2 or 3 days. One day is in Steuben, which is like north of Bar Harbor.
Okay.
And
cool, because Bar Harbor is one of my stops on this little August tour.
Well, send me your dates, man. We'll have
send
you. We'll get. We'll get
send me
you.
Your dates, because I don't have mine yet.
Oh, well, my date...
Do you know when you're going to do it?
Yeah, I think probably the weekend of the 14th.
Okay,
and
cool.
the seaweed, we would, you know, we'd give you a workshop.
I mean,
you could, like, teach something or take us somewhere.
Yeah.
Make a still.
That would be amazing. I'll look into that.
Yeah, if we could like get a welder man to make us a still. Okay, we gotta get on track. We're on track. We gotta go on track.
Okay. I'm gonna hand the phone to Adam.
Thank you, Adam, for your patience. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sev.
Thank you, wonderful Marianis.
All right, I'll keep in touch. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Ciao.
Ciao.
Hey, when's this gonna air?
I don't know. I'm going to Italy with Amy Franceschini. We got a Trojan horse with a jam kitchen in its belly. That's why I'm pre-recording. I'll tell you about it later.
All right.
Okay, here it
is. Ciao.
Adam. Whoa, is it busy around there?
What's up, Severin?
Adam, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. How's for it your... it sounds like it's busy. It's going good here.
Oh, man. It's, yeah, we have quite a few people here. We just had some cats from Kathmandu show up.
Wait, pause. Let's talk about it on the air. Boys? Okay. Boys in the studio? We're good. Now? We're fading.
You just tell me
when. We just start. We just keep talking.
So we're live.
So here we are. I've got Adam Mariani, the brother of Andrew Mariani, the wonderful team of stallions who are at the forefront of this vineyard, Scribe Vineyard in Sonoma, California. And Adam,
it's a wine farm.
It's a wine farm. Now, yeah. Adam, let's talk about something. You are the brother of Andrew, and you're the older or younger brother?
Slightly younger. Quite a bit younger, maybe. Maybe it's better to say quite a bit. 4 years younger?
Well, it doesn't really matter in the end, but it's...
3 years, we'll say. Where I am a younger brother. I'm even shorter than him, too, which kind of adds to the older, younger brother kind of dynamic. And he loves to play with that dynamic. But beyond the physical... And the ages that we each have, there's not too much that separates us. We have a lot of the same manifestos, and we both people say have great hair too. So
I can attest to that.
We have a lot in common still.
Well, I just was there recently visiting with my little brother, and I must say it's such a wonderful thing to work with to be with your sibling. And having wonderful adventures and to be with your sibling in the business way and as teamsters hitched to the same wagon load, I think must be a pretty exciting thing.
But it is.
What I wanted to hear about maybe a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, is this childhood that you had that inspired both of you kind of in the same ways.
To me, it was a totally normal childhood, but it really makes what we do now seem really like natural evolution or just kind of the way I don't know, it needs to be done, at least for us to be kind of satisfied with what we do and happy with what we do. And I think that growing up in a farming family, living on a farm in a very family-oriented environment where the business partners are brothers, and I mean my father and his brother started their a farming company, and my father's father and so on, and it's really just kind of been, I don't know, it's really enhanced everything that we've kind of come to know in terms of, you know, a lifestyle and how that's really just paralleled with a career, and there's never been a difference to us, I don't think. I mean, I personally have never looked at a career as being something different than the lifestyle that I would want to lead or that my father leads. I think we really cherish that lifestyle, that duality of you know, living through your career, and I think we both. I mean, I a lot of times. I mean, I you a lot of times just say we. I feel like I I speak for the both of us, my brother and I, a lot, but I should probably be more, a little more cautious when I do that. But I think being in the wine industry is what, I mean, why we were drawn to be in the wine industry, besides being attracted to the art and difficulty of growing grapes and making good wine, is the face that has with the public, that it's a very public farming lifestyle. It's very much in the public eye, and it's a way that we can really, I mean, do something that we love, being farmers and living off the land and physically living on the land where our livelihood comes from, and be connected with our family and what our ancestors have all done, but also be very much involved in the community and have others, especially at this point, I mean, our people our age, our friends in their young 20s and or in their 20s and early 30s, see that farming is a completely viable and necessary career lifestyle path that people need and should take, and it's not this, you know, far off place that, you know, happens somewhere else, not around the lives that they're leading. It is something that, you know, people can choose to do, even if their fathers weren't farmers or their grandparents weren't farmers. There's many different ways to be a farmer and to live off the land and do good things. So,
well, you guys are doing some pretty good things, and I think because you're doing such good things, you have, in a sense, this privilege, which is that your practice, your farming and your cultivation of these grapes and your very clever alchemy that does happen somewhere in some cave quietly and mysteriously, your practice becomes your podium, in a sense. And mm-hmm. I think that's, as I say, is a tremendous privilege that as we kind of surround ourselves by our farms and as we create businesses around our intentions and shape that land and shape our businesses and bring in the people that we want to work with and have relationships with those people and that are durable and long lasting, the podium kind of gets bigger and bigger and bigger the more successful we are at bringing that intention out from ourselves into the land and into the organism of commerce that we have. You guys have got a pretty nice podium.
It's fun. I mean, it's a pretty selfish podium, to be honest, because I think what it comes down to, it's just kind of like a playground that we've set up here, or trying to set up, where we get to do whatever really we want to do, and maybe that's because that's the essence of it all. Really, kind of then translates and turns out to be a good representative of who we are.
Well, you know, and controlling the conditions of your labor, not to get too heavy, but controlling the conditions of your labor and having the capacity to, to plant the rose arbor under which you will then walk, metaphorically, mm-hmm. and, you know, in farming, in practice. Mm-hmm.
I think we've actually done that physically.
what kind of roses?
Oh, a variety. It's a field blend, to use a viticultural term.
A field blend.
Yeah, we don't really know is what that means.
Oh, okay, got it.
Just a whole bunch of little bit of everything.
A whole bunch of little bit of roses. But anyway, it's great to see, and what I'm also interested in, just as far as this business, now you guys are in, what, your fourth year?
In terms of...
Well, I guess maybe, let's do a play-by-play. How did this happen, this whole Scribe Winery thing?
Oh, man.
Short version.
Made some wine, needed to sell it, so we bought a farm to sell it from and continue to make it from.
That's good. That's like the Twitter version.
We started making wine in 2004, and with no direct intention of how we were gonna get rid of it. It was just something we wanted to do, and all of a sudden the opportunity came up. Kind of, you know, all these stars aligned that we would kind of be able to do it. We were both still quite young, and one of us was even underage still at that point. But because, I mean, even getting into it was very much a big family activity. So we started making wine in 2004, and then started to make our home here on this farm that you visited with your family in 2007. And then started selling wine just a few months ago, in the end of 2009.
And then
so
in 2000,
we're still selling our first vintages from 2004.
Take note, everyone at home, still in stock.
Still not in, barely. Not after today, though. I mean, we just had this crew of like 12 people show up. From half of them are from Kathmandu, Nepal.
What?
Yeah, they said we heard about your 2007 Chardonnay, and they're like, people only drive 60 kilometers an hour over in Kathmandu, so it took us a while to get here, but we came, and I think they're enjoying it right now. I can see them out the window, seem to be enjoying themselves, smiles.
Man, that's pretty cool. I think that's the moment when you bust out the guest book.
Yeah, it's there. It's already there. Yeah.
Good.
I wonder what language they'll write in.
Well, you guys were incredibly generous when we had our recent Petaluma Young Farmers Mixer, mm-hmm. and you guys threw down. I wasn't even expecting. And suddenly, I was drinking Scribe wine. I was like, God, this is such good stuff.
Oh, did you recognize it in the glass?
Even in the dark,
yeah. How was that? I was only there at the party for the first few minutes. I heard it. It had a few different dynamics going on. First, it was really bright, and then it went just dark and candlelit, and it was actually pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, it was good. It was the 600 oysters were definitely the highlight for me.
Yeah.
And just the golden light of the bank and all these confident, young, brown, strong, able-bodied, you know, comfortable in their own bodies, people.
Yeah.
You know,
bodies from the farm, really. Bronzed and toned.
And
a lot of beautiful, there's a lot of beautiful people there that night.
Well, and some of them were winery people.
One thing I didn't realize that the seed bank in Petaluma was actually in an old, big, beautiful bank.
Yeah. So such dignity in that space.
Yeah. It was cool.
People take their gold really seriously. And
I like that.
I think that taking our seeds that seriously and taking the future of our agriculture that seriously, you know, and having that kind of arcaded, twinkling marble feeling around us, mm-hmm. is a very positive development.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a great. I like the way you spin that. I mean, a lot of people, and I would in most instances consider myself one of them, but really argue that all value. All monetary value today is really first and foremost derived from the earth, from the soil, and having seed being sold and housed in a bank can be quite fitting.
All our wealth is from the earth. Beautiful, fabulous essay. I would like to just point out at this moment, seeing as how the point of this programming is to orient you all as listeners to some of the history, institutional wisdom, and you know, past and future liturgy on this agrarian movement. There's a wonderful, wonderful legacy. What are we talking about again? Seeds.
Seed and wealth originating in the soil.
Oh yes, thank you kindly. Oh Lord, I almost lost my beans. There's wonderful essay in this last issue of the Quivera Coalition newsletter. Quivera Coalition is kind of like the eco-savvy ranchers group, and they're down in New Mexico. We're so thrilled to know about them, and their newsletter recently republished some of these essays that were written about the new agrarianism. I would really recommend, you can even just Google new agrarianism, and you'll find these treatises about themes exactly this, the dignity and the intention and the set of practices that are involved in the understanding that all of us are a part of the land that we live on and are given strength by that land and are part of the cycle of life. But it sounds a little bit funny when I'm saying it now because I'm in Brooklyn, but read the essay because you'll get a better picture. Now, we haven't got very much time, so I want to make sure that I give you a chance to talk about your particular areas of interest there and what you're focusing on particularly, Adam, in your own and with your own might.
With my own might here on the farm at Scribe?
Yeah, or just generally.
Or just in general.
What are you pulling? What are you pushing?
I've been spending a bit of time lately, taking some time out of my schedule to work on putting together our first, we still don't have a name for it, but Scribe publication, kind of a newspaper, a magazine thing of sorts that the idea was to go out quarterly, and we were thinking of using the word quarterly in the name, but then we realized that people expect for it to come out quarterly, and we might not have our have all of our
shit together.
Stuff put together each quarter, ready to go out each quarter. So we're playing with some ideas for to rework the name, but to have a kind of a Scribe publication or something of the sorts to kind of use as another real just kind of podium to besides the wine and the farm.
And what are you going to talk about?
I think anything and everything. We really don't want to put any boundaries on it. I mean, we'll talk about the farm and what's going on and say some stuff about wine and what's going on in the vineyards. But I think it'll also just kind of be a forum for all of our friends and whoever we feel would have something great to say, just to say what they want, regardless if it's about farming or not.
Well, it's so interesting in this time when agricultural newspapers and rural small town newspapers are just having a hard time, and you know, people who are among us trying to find used farm equipment are having to resort to Craigslist because the newspapers are all gone. But at the same time, there's this upwelling of literary force, and it's like we're all just trying to create more places to talk and think.
Well, maybe I'll interview you.
Okay.
for our publication.
Sounds like I'd say we're even then.
Okay.
And that's critical. I mean, I think that reciprocity is positive.
Absolutely. People helping people.
People helping people.
Isn't that what it's all about?
So there you are, and this is your fourth year. Andrew started to describe a little bit the gardens. But maybe you could describe a little bit the food garden part and just kind of how that's laid out and what you found when you started digging.
Ooh, what we found. Ooh, that gets into some stuff. I hope my brother didn't talk too much about that.
No, he didn't spill the beans.
Okay. Cause there might be some things that beans shouldn't be spilled. But no, we have some, besides the vineyards here, we have quite a bit going on, and we have our gardens, and we have some animal husbandry and whatnot going on, but we have a pretty small, just like a 1 acre or so production garden for all of our meals and guests and events that we do here, and we kind of have an open-door policy to our gardens. Anybody that really essentially knows that they're there, we're set quite a bit off the road, but anybody who knows that they're there is more than welcome to come, you know, harvest little bits here and there, and we use them for our parties.
You know that you're on the radio.
I know, but I know it's East Coast, so I don't know how many people will fly across country to get a nice, fresh cantaloupe. Maybe they will.
Golly, cantaloupes! Oh dear.
But we're also gonna, and well, this will actually probably go in our quarterly scribble or our scribe archive or whatever the publication's gonna be called. But kind of a demonstration garden, where we're gonna designate one portion of our garden to use as a demonstration for what people could do that, you know, aren't farmers and maybe live, don't have access to, you know, an acre of land, but do have access to, you know, maybe 100 square feet or 50 square feet in their backyard, of a production, a demonstration garden of what they could do there and how they could, you know, grow a lot of their own vegetables and herbs and produce or fruits and do it in their own scale.
I mean, that's the thing. It's just so phenomenal how much you can get out of how little. And, you know, just mm-hmm. I'm sitting here in this tiny little retrofitted tractor trailer truck that is, it is 150,000 people per month are listening to the cultural production that occurs within these walls. When you think about how little it takes to get something so fabulous pulsing through you. Now, my farm is called Smithereen Farm, and it's based on the premise that an intentional explosion has a lot of power, and even if they're just tiny little smithers, that the impact is tremendous.
But mm-hmm. I thought you were going to save 150,000 tomatoes growing in your little trailer.
Oh, wouldn't that be good? There's a lot of stuff growing on the roof of this little trailer. They have a huge greenhouse wrapped around the top of it.
Really?
Yeah, you got to come out here and see. I just was reading the newspaper today, and it says another farm. It's like, sounds, there's like, you know, rooftop farms is expanding. And anyway, it's good news around here, I'd say. Okay, so now we know you, and we met a little bit, your next vision and your next project. And people can just email you, or what should they do?
Anything. Email, call, just show up.
Just show up and just 1 second now. Just show up. Mm-hmm. Tell us Sonoma County and your area, which is Sonoma, the capital there. Mm-hmm. Is this a place that's hospitable for more new growers?
The area?
Mm-hmm, the area.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one thing out of a few that's really great about Sonoma compared, just in comparison to the valley next door, Napa, is that it's you know, much more of a polyculture. There are very much of the land is occupied by vineyards and growing grapes, but there is quite a bit of other you know, farm production going on in the area, and there's always room for more. Are you kidding? We'd welcome it.
Well, I'm thankful for you coming on the show. I look forward so much to future collaborations and festivations.
When are you going to be back out here?
October. Okay. We're going to do a whole tour October, November. I'm going to be up on the West. Yeah, October. but may the celebration continue. I was there. We went to the diner.
In the Fremont Diner.
Holy moly, the chocolate shakes.
Amazing, yeah.
It's
great. I mean, there needs to be more Fremont Diners in the world.
More diners. You hear?
More diners. But it's not just any diner. It's the diner food, and at this point, even though it's in California, it has a little kind of southern flair to it, but all the ingredients are sourced from small farms, you know, in the area, and they actually they take some produce from us and some of our eggs, and they give us their compost so we can use it in our gardens and our vineyards. And but hey, what if there were smaller Fremont diners, you know, in every gas station instead of being like an A&W or a Carl's Jr.? What if they're all little Fremont diners everywhere?
Well, if you can see it, you can be it, kids. join the fleet today. Thank you so much, Adam, for joining us.
Thank you, Seth.
Thank you all listeners in the ether worlds for your continued allegiance to this spontaneous and often slightly disorganized radio programming. We're thrilled to be here, sponsored by Hearst Family Ranch, sponsored by the beer of this bounteous Brooklyn, sponsored by heritageradionetwork.com, and the many, many wonderful people who are making this movement move. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Well, I'm not gonna get me here.